Go talk to the geniuses that are online. I don't know.
It's time to Belichick your premises. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski, and I'm here at Midsider Michael's house in Houston, Texas, with my co-host, Daniel T. Richards. How are you, Daniel?
I'm excited. I have been having football withdrawal, and thus getting to go to the preseason game recently with Midsider Michael and you was a treat. Almost like getting methadone for a heroin addict.
Yeah, but it's not... Well, no, actually, that's a good metaphor, methadone for heroin addict, because it wasn't full football.
Right.
Like, preseason football is, you get about two quarters in, and you're in the third quarter, and you're like, really? I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to watch the rest of this right now?
Right. It's like, oh, they put in the ball boy. They're testing out the ball boy at wide receiver.
At about the point when they put in Jacoby Brissett, I was like, do I want to stay here?
Speaking of, we did have some good brisket here in Texas. This is Texas, the home of barbecue. All of the other states can suck it. We waited in line for an hour to get some delicious barbecue at Corkscrew Barbecue in Houston or in the Houston area. So if you're in there, go get some barbecue. You have to line up at 10:30 in the morning.
Apparently it is Zagat rated, which means something. I was told it's pre-Yelp. Yelp?
It's like Yelp, but for pretentious people and also no crowdsourcing.
Oh, my girlfriend said Zagat was good. Did you just call my girlfriend pretentious?
No, I mean the people at Zagat are pretentious, not people who use...
Okay.
Yeah.
But what you're referring to when you're saying, you know, we're here, we're in Houston, we had Corkscrew, or the preseason game is, for those who aren't paying attention to preseason football because it's preseason football, we saw Patriots, they played against the Houston Texans last night. So you may have been recording this. It was on Saturday the 19th. Yes?
Sure.
Saturday the 19th, we saw the Patriots play in Texas. We returned to the scene of the crime, quite literally. I made us walk around the stadium and figure out. I was, like, reading the box scores. I watched the highlights. I had to figure out, based upon where the logo was in the center of the field and which direction it was facing, to figure out which end zone James White scored the Super Bowl-winning touchdown in.
That's
so
right.
I could take a picture of it.
To quote Mark Watney, we science the shit out of that thing. So,
I thought you were going to quote Mark Wahlberg because we were talking about the Patriots. I'm a little disappointed.
Does Mark Wahlberg speak?
Yeah, he goes over to Tom Brady and says, "You're the greatest of all time." That's what Mark Wahlberg says.
All right. Well, I'm not quoting Mark Wahlberg.
I will always quote Mark Wahlberg. Yeah, we were here. We were here in Houston. We saw the game. We returned to the scene of the crime. We got to see Brady play for a couple drives. We got to see Garoppolo play for a couple quarters. We got to see Brissett fumble the ball forward out of the end zone, which you mentioned is your least favorite rule in all of football.
It is. I when you fumble it out of bounds, the ball is dead. That's how it works. When you fumble it and through the end zone, the other team gets the ball. It's a touchback. That makes no sense. You basically made your way all the way to the opposing team's goal line, and then you fumble the ball, and they get the ball back because of it. That seems like the death penalty for jaywalking, is what that seems like to me.
It's strange, because any other time you fumble the ball out of bounds, you keep the ball.
Right.
So why is it you fumble it all the way forward and you don't keep the ball?
Right.
And also, if you had landed on the ball, if somebody had jumped on the ball in the end zone, that would have been a touchdown for the Patriots.
Right.
So why is it if it rolls a few more inches forward, you lose it?
I have no idea. That's my least favorite rule in football. Second least favorite rule is an automatic first down for holding.
Defensive holding?
Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah, that's the Peyton Manning rule.
Yeah.
That was created, well, not just the Peyton Manning rule, but after the Patriots won the first Super Bowl against the Rams, they figured out if you jam the receivers and manhandle them, that when you're a finesse team, you can't handle the physicality, and that gave the advantage to the Patriots defense. So the game of football was changed after that when Bill Polian of the Indianapolis Colts went to the rules committee and said, hey, we need to make this change because our team with Peyton Manning and the finesse player he is and the finesse franchise and offense he created can't succeed under these physical conditions, and they change the rules for them, and then the game has been what it is ever since, where we've seen increasingly, you know, Brady threw the 50 touchdowns that one season. Then how many did Manning throw? Was it 55 that one season?
Or something. 50 a lot.
Yeah. Right. But when we're talking about these rules, you know, we're talking about going to the preseason game. And for me, when I'm at the preseason game and people are getting excited about what's happening in the game, like, yeah, I get it, you're a Texans fan. But just to see how energetic they would get when finally the Texans scored, or, you know, I love Deshaun Watson, you know, still a hero, Clemson fan. I went to Clemson. He won us a national college championship. I love him. And he scores the 2-yard running touchdown and people go nuts like it's a preseason game. And when we're here watching that, we're talking about these rules. There is this uncomfortable emotionalism in fandom that the media, I think, fans like a fire to keep selling. I don't know, what do they sell? Commercials the media sells? Or, yeah, you know, the NFL sells jerseys? Mm-hmm. And it makes it very hard to be a fan of any team. And I think that that's what you want to talk about with this show, right?
Yeah, so let's talk about what we're actually doing here. So thanks for tuning in for 5-6 minutes to hear us rant before we actually talk about what the hell the show is about. Welcome to the Midside.
Well, that's the wrong show.
It's all part of the Midside. You know it. Don't play coy with me. The show, to me, what I want to get out of this show is basically have what I call very pretentiously rational sports talk. Of course, that implies that all their sports talk is irrational, and that's true. So, screw off. No, not all of it is irrational, but my
point
is...
Did you just say Jared Goff?
Yes. Do I have to repeat myself? I don't want to say his name twice. It's terrible. If you say it a third time...
We trade Jimmy Garoppolo for him.
Right, exactly.
He ends up on your franchise.
Yeah, so we don't want that. So what I want to do, for me, what I want to do on this show is have a place where we can discuss what's happening in the world of sports, primarily football, because that is the only sport, in my opinion. Screw you, golf. Sorry.
No, screw you, baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Something I've never understood, the brief tangent here. Well, before we continue to talk about what the show is about, another tangent. This show will be more tangent-based than the primary podcast is. So get ready for more stories and more tangents. Growing up, they always said America's pastime is baseball.
America's pastime is fast food.
But football is more the fast food of sports, isn't it? And I don't mean that in like its lower quality, but I mean in the way of its design. If you look at baseball was a time before we had the media we have now, before we had the kind of fast-paced society we have now. Football fits more in with the way our society is designed now.
Yeah, baseball is the slow insulin drip of America. It's not the fast food, certainly.
Right. So to me, football was always America's sport. And I think, and I even said this last night while we were at the stadium, I turned to Midsider Michael, who generously brought us to the game, so thank you very much for that, Michael. But I turned to him and I said, you know, on Welcome to the Midside, the main show, and on the media and on social media, everyone talks about all this social justice stuff. Like, while we were at the game and while we were in Houston, there's these Antifa protests going on in Boston, you know, my hometown where the Patriots are from. And Daniel, you saw a post. What did the post from Antifa say?
No room for capitalists, libertarians, conservatives, classical liberals, or anyone who supports the U.S. Constitution in the city of Boston. Get out. Boston resistance.
So they're telling us to get out, right? Which, major movie came out with that name too. Not saying that that's an intentional reference on that point. I'm saying it's in the subconscious of the culture. That's in the subconscious of the culture. But then we're here. We're in Houston. We've got these giant fucking dudes running into each other, playing this barbaric sport. And we got these beautiful women dressed in cheerleaders with these white booty shorts showing their midriffs that are very toned. And it's amazing, and everyone loves it there, and there's no malevolence. It's all benevolence. Everyone's accepted it. And this is a $1 billion industry, and we're supposed to believe that all this other stuff has won so far? I don't believe it has, and I think football is an example of America, and, you know, to be pretentious, Americana. So I think it's important we talk about it rationally, and we address what the values are we get out of it. And as we've mentioned on the main show, there is an attack on it right now because of what I'm saying. They know they need to go after it in order to achieve their goals eventually.
Right. Absolutely. You have to, if you want to attack and undercut America, a huge part of that is sport. You have to be able to undercut that.
Specifically football.
Specifically football. Absolutely. So I would say that, I'm spitballing a little bit here, but I'd say that there are primarily going to be two things we're talking about on this show, two broad categories.
Tom Brady.
And Bill Belichick. Yeah, two broad categories. No. The two broad categories, I think, are going to be football as sport and talking about, again, the word of the show today is pretentious, but like the philosophy of sport, what we get out of it, what's good about it, who is good at it, why they're good at it, basically football as sport, but then also...
So that's Tom Brady.
That's Tom Brady. The other one is not going to be Bill Belichick. It's false dichotomy, bro.
This metaphor does not work.
Does not work. But the other one is going to be because the way we consume football is through media. And when something is put through media, there is by necessity a mediation. And thus, there is going to be a narrative created. So football as media, the experience of football through the lens of narrative, storytelling, editing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I think what you just said has more value than every thesis written out of our master's program at Clemson University.
Except mine. Mine was genius.
Well, our present company excluded. Mine was pretty good, too.
Yeah, it was something about the fashion shows. What are we talking about?
What fashion shows?
I don't know. I don't know what you wrote about.
South Park and Lost and about how the...
Oh, remediation. That was yours. Right.
Reification.
Right. Yeah.
How we use pop culture references to reinforce the culture, which is very much what we're talking here. I mean, ESPN very much used that in the 90s. That's how SportsCenter got popular.
Yeah.
When they were saying highlights, they created a culture that the males in our society became a part of by watching SportsCenter every night or every morning.
Yeah.
You heard the references... Stuart Scott, when he passed away, that was something they talked about very much. The things they would say while saying the highlights. And then Chris Berman, when he would do the fast, you know, he still does the fastest 2 minutes in, or the fastest 3 minutes in sports.
Yeah.
And he's saying all these references to all these different players. That becomes the common vernacular you speak in as a sports fan.
Yeah.
And ESPN, first ESPN reference, but you'll hear many of these, has become the leader of that. They've controlled the conversation. When you talk about the media narrative, I think we have to talk about ESPN.
Oh, we will talk about ESPN.
Because here's the thing when you talk about ESPN. A lot of this comes from the fact that the first fake news was Deflategate.
Ooh, hot take.
Now, obviously it's not really the first true fake news. I mean, we could go into a whole discussion of that. I don't think that's relevant to this show. But would you say it's something like maybe Watergate or even Vietnam? You could argue maybe Vietnam was the first fake news because of the way they portrayed American soldiers as barbaric and rapist and, you know, just killing all the civilians there and everything. So there's many discussions we could have about that. But as far as in modern culture, and you look at the way ESPN and other media latched onto that story to destroy the image, to try and destroy the image of Tom Brady and destroy the image of the New England Patriots, to portray them as cheaters with very little to no evidence, and that still to this day, people will call him a cheater, or they'll make cheater jokes, or even we're at the game last night, right? And this guy's a Patriots fan. He has a Patriots hat on, he has a Patriots shirt on, and he turns to he's two rows ahead of us, and he turns to the people behind him, and he makes a joke. And this joke was so bad that I even had to ask you to explain it to me. And he turns to the guy behind him and he goes, yeah, the Patriots better take a video of Brady on Monday so the NFL doesn't accuse him of stealing the sun.
Yeah, that would be the day when the eclipse is happening for anyone who is as oblivious about it as Justin was. Yeah.
My only awareness of the eclipse is Clemson keeps posting on their Facebook page, get your Clemson glasses for the Clemson eclipse, because apparently Clemson is on that axis of supposedly Trump supporters where the eclipse is happening. Have you seen that graphic?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was the Boston Globe. Because, you know, you can't just cover the Patriots. The Boston Globe says where the eclipse cuts across the nation is supposedly all Trump counties. How do they come up with this stuff? But that's the point of the whole narrative when we look at the narrative in relation to sports. Even the Patriots fan there is still making jokes about Tom Brady being a cheater and about them coming after him.
Yeah, it's so much in the zeitgeist of being a Patriots fan. And I mean, one of the things...
Being an NFL fan.
Sure, being an NFL fan, but specifically being a Patriots fan is having to deal with... figure out how you're going to deal with it, how you're going to reconcile it, or if you are going to reconcile it. Maybe the interesting things for this first episode is to talk about how I got into football in general.
Well, before we do that...
Yeah, okay.
Well, I think that's great.
We're going to do a commercial for MeUndies.
It does sound like I'm about to transition into
a True Car.
Yeah, True Car. Before we do that, let's look at the reality behind buying a car. That's difficult. No, I'm just kidding. Before we do that, what I want to talk about very briefly is how do you deal with that as a Patriots fan? And I want to do that because I want to be a narcissist and talk about how I deal with that. So I've created a script. And what I mean by that is anytime anyone says anything to me about being a Patriots fan, I know exactly what to say to them.
Mm-hmm.
So the other weekend, I was at Huntington Beach with my girlfriend, and we're standing on the corner, and some guy next to me says, "Oh man, I love your hat." I'm like, "Oh cool, are you a Patriots fan?" He's like, "Yeah." So I go into my script. The first question I ask anyone when they ask me about being a Patriots fan is I go, "Where are you from?"
Mm-hmm.
And if they say Massachusetts, then I can start talking to them about the Patriots. Then I can go into in-depth. Then I can be relaxed. And I can be freewheeling. Unless they start saying Drew Bledsoe should have never been benched. That's a whole other fucking... When we talk about crazy, irrational, emotionless fans, those are the original. The ones who still say Drew Bledsoe never got a fair shake over Tom Brady. But I can talk to them, and I can have a conversation with him. But for instance, this guy was from Las Vegas.
Hmm.
So then immediately my next question is, oh, how did you become a Patriots fan? And when he mumbles through an answer and can't come up with an answer... I finish my script with him and I go, oh, well, you know, I really appreciate your support. You know, I know you're not like, you know, an original fan the way I am. Like, my dad's did season tickets to 73, but it's great to have you on our side. I love that. Thank you. And, you know, then it becomes a benevolent conversation rather than it becoming adversarial. And I have this sort of script for every other team. It's really easy. It goes AFC versus NFC. So if anyone says they're an NFC team, I just shake their hand and I go, dude, I don't have a problem with you. Why are you upset with us? Hopefully I'll see you in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they immediately soften and they go, oh yeah, this guy doesn't hate us. He just wants to win. And it's not anything personal. Now, if it's the AFC, it gets a little more complicated because you have the bitchy Chargers fans who are still mad because they still think LaDainian Tomlinson and Phillip Rivers are really good. If anyone remembers LaDainian Tomlinson really hated the Patriots. Steelers fans can be tough too. Obviously, anyone in the AFC East, I mean, the Dolphins fans, although, you know, they have Jay Cutler now, so for a year we can just rip on them, beat them relentlessly. The really tough thing, though, is while I was standing there talking to that guy, there was just someone I had to ignore. There was a kid sitting on the curb behind me, and just he started talking shit about the Patriots to try and get me to respond to him, calling them cheaters, saying they're awful, saying they don't deserve to win anything, and he hates Tom Brady. And even with my script, there's still people I have to ignore.
Yeah. This is something that... I deal with it in a kind of similar way, so that mine's insanely broad, my response. Which is basically, if they're an NFC team, see you in the Super Bowl, so we have that in common.
Yeah. That's really easy.
If they're an AFC team, I have one script, and one script only, which is, I don't know, looks like your team could be a challenge this year.
Oh, man.
And then moving on.
You're nicer than I am. I usually go the opposite way, where if they're a Raiders fan, I go... What, dude, you're still mad about the Tuck rule?
No, I don't do any of that.
Because I know with each team what it is the specific thing they're mad about is.
Yes.
Like if they're a Steelers fan, I know ultimately they're mad that Roethlisberger could not beat the Patriots.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Even like the great Dave Damashek talks about that, by the way. Tangent on his show, the Dave Damashek Football Podcast, where he says that everyone says, oh, the great rivalry between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Patriots. There is no rivalry. When you get whipped every single time by one team, that's not a rivalry.
Right. We have more of a rivalry with the Baltimore Ravens, who somehow beat us every once in a while in an embarrassing way. Like when Ray Rice broke that 86-yard touchdown, that one opening drive for them, and the game was over from their point. Or when we missed the field goal at the end to send them to the Super Bowl that they eventually won. Like, that's a rivalry. That stings. I mean, the fact that I still remember that stings. But what do I remember about the Steelers? Oh, we beat them again?
Exactly. Not a rivalry. But anyway, so one of the things, and this will lead back to my story, is for whatever reason, I came to football late, and so I don't think I got any of this...
Because you grew up as a pussy. in the band, you fucking band geek.
That's true. I did hate the football team when I was in high school. I basically...
Such a stereotype.
My description of football was a bunch of dumbass men getting the body armor and run into each other.
To be clear, I'm not saying people in bands are pussies. I'm being flippant.
You? Since when? No, but what I was going to say is I don't identify with, and I don't have even a smidge of this I'm going to shit on other people's teams when I talk with them. Like, it to me, it's all friendly competition.
Now, all?
Hold on. Hold on. There are specific players I don't like. There are specific coaching styles I don't like.
Terrell sucks.
But it's not as if, like, Baltimore Ravens universally as a concept to me is offensive.
You've named the one team that, like, even they're more offensive than the Jets. Look, when I am at the same weekend we played the Ravens in the AFC Championship game, when I'm at Red Lobster, which is probably my own fault for going to Red Lobster, but
yes,
because we know the crowd of Red Lobster. When the waitress goes to me,
"Oh there,
oh you're a Patriots," that is an objective truth. That is not, you go into Red Lobster, that is just the demographics. Okay, I'm making an observation. I'm not making a statement about why anyone likes or does not like. I'm just saying you go into Red Lobster. Who's in Red Lobster?
My mother.
Okay,
it's her favorite restaurant.
Outlier.
Okay.
Outlier.
Okay.
But the waitress looks at me. And she sees my jersey, and she tells me her team is the Ravens. And she says, "Do you want to know why my team is the Ravens?" "Oh, because my name is Raven." If there was a team named after you, if there was, like, the Justins, wouldn't you support them? And I'm just like, no. Like, it's hard for me. Like, all the stories I have of Ravens fans are just... And the Ravens, like, tell me one good story about the Ravens or Ravens fans. The best thing I can say about Ravens is Ray Rice, his wife hit him first. That's the best thing I can say about the Baltimore Ravens.
They're named after an Edgar Allan Poe poem.
Isn't Poe was like the first goth and like?
No, but he was a good writer.
Okay. That's just, we can say two good things about the Baltimore Ravens: that Ray Rice's wife has hit him first, and that Edgar Allan Poe was a good writer. And their mascot is named Poe, I believe.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, three. There you go.
And MC Lars has a song.
Two and a half. Yeah.
Called
one with two subdivisions.
Yeah.
But no, my point is that I can't think of the Ravens as this platonic thing. Like it's ever more outside of the, you know, the realm of forms. So if their coaching staff changed, if their team philosophy changed, there'd be no reason for me to dislike that they're no longer what they were. Right.
Oh, certainly. And that's something we will be addressing over the next 3 or so years. When we see Brady leave.
Sure.
And Brady retire, and then Belichick is going to leave eventually. And how do you have that continuity? And when you know, when we talk about that, the best thing to say about the Pittsburgh Steelers and why they have 6 Super Bowls is Rooney, the owner, has figured out that continuity.
Yes.
So I agree with you when you're saying you can't have the platonic ideals because there's the turnover in philosophy when you have the coaches and the players leave.
This is something I have existential dread about. I seriously do. Like, am I still going to be... Like, how am I going to deal with my Patriots fandom post-Belichick-Brady era? Because I have never not been a fan when... I mean, I've never been a fan when they weren't playing. And this is because I just came to football late, not because I was bandwagon. In fact, the year I started being a Patriots fan was the year after they lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl. My first ever Patriots game that I watched... My first ever football game that I watched in its entirety was the Patriots losing to the Giants in that Super Bowl. So... Justin's crying right now for all the
It's a bad memory. I don't like it.
The listeners out there. I just remember Justin, we were in Justin's apartment.
I'm not really crying.
In Clemson, watching the football game, everything going fine. And at the end, Justin's literally just standing, staring at the TV with his two hands on top of his head, elbows out like a spitfire, just staring as people just slowly trickle out of the apartment, being like, "Goodbye, see you."
I literally did not believe they were going to lose until Randy Moss did not catch that bomb. Because that's all season. It was just when we needed something, we would just throw the bomb and Randy Moss would catch it. But it went off of his fingertips. That's when I knew we were going to lose. Even after the helmet catch, I was like, no, we still have Randy Moss.
Yeah, so I grew up in Illinois and we have the Bears.
The Bears have one of the greatest teams of all time, though.
Yeah, but I was one. I was like a half year old when they were good.
No, the 86 Super Bowl, so the 85 season.
I'm born in late 84, so I was like 1.5 or something, like when they were good. So I don't have any memory of that. I have no connection with that.
That Super Bowl was so bad when they played the Patriots. My dad was there with his best friend, and they left at halftime. That's how bad that Super Bowl was.
Super Bowl?
That's how bad the Patriots were getting destroyed in that Super Bowl.
Wow.
I wouldn't leave.
That's impressive.
But that's how bad it was.
So I grew up in Illinois, and oddly, for no reason, my entire family are Dolphins fans. All of them. And it's a Marino thing.
Right.
They were really hardcore into Dan Marino.
That's bandwagon.
That's pretty bandwagon.
Is Dan Marino the first fake news? Because everyone thinks he's better than he is. He never won a championship. Questions we'll ask here.
Questions we'll ask here, yes. So I didn't grow up into it. I didn't particularly like it. It never interested me. When I watched that Super Bowl, what first struck me was the second half of the two things we're going to talk about here, which is the narrative of the whole thing. I had never seen something so interestingly dramatic in my life. And it didn't end up the way you wanted it to be. So in a certain sense, it was a tragedy. But it was still insane.
For us, it was a tragedy. For most of America,
right. Well, I was with you. So thus, I was seeing that perspective. It was a tragedy from that perspective.
You were seeing the outlier in America perspective.
Yes, but it was incredibly compelling as a narrative.
Oh, good. I'm glad my suffering was compelling for you.
Yes, indeed. You and Oedipus. Both incredibly compelling. Don't go there. Okay. So, but the next year was when Justin invited me to come watch games with him.
The first two games you watched?
The first game I watched.
Well, the second game you watched, but the first regular season game you watched.
First regular season game I watched.
Game one against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yes. Tom Brady.
Oh my God, we have game one against the Kansas City Chiefs this year.
Yes.
I'm terrified.
Uh-huh. Gets his knee blown out. And is out for the entire season.
Yeah.
And from that point forward, now that's pretty grotesque in a certain sense, but I was hooked. Because to me, that was an incredible story.
Because Tom Brady still, with a blown out knee, almost walked off under his own power.
Yes, indeed. And then this new guy, Matt Castle, comes in. And the whole season to me was incredibly dramatic. And I got to watch, again, this first year for me was almost entirely about narrative. I got to see an incredibly interesting narrative play out. But I got my first glimpse of the other side of it, but from the coaching perspective. Because I got to see a coach take a second-string quarterback who wasn't very highly thought of at all.
He didn't even start in college.
Right.
Matt Castle.
And they still went 10-6 that year. Didn't make the playoffs because the division was quite good that year for whatever reason.
Wasn't that the year Brett Favre threw the interception?
Yes.
For the Jets, and then the Dolphins beat them, and the Dolphins won the title?
Yes. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, I believe so as well. So, fucking Brett Favre and his overrated interceptions.
That's right. So that was an incredibly interesting narrative to me, and then the second year I was watching football was when Tom Brady came back, and that's when I got to experience both halves of this dichotomy simultaneously. I got to see talent like I had never seen before, and I also got to see an incredible narrative about a team through the lens of a Patriots fan in Justin. And that's when I started digging into the overall narrative of football and why people hated the Patriots. Because remember, I had no idea. I didn't hate the Patriots. I didn't know anything about the Patriots.
Right. And I want to be clear when you say from the perspective of a Patriots fan, part of what we're going to talk about with the narrative is even the narratives fans make.
Yes.
Because I hear it all the time that people hate Patriots fans.
Right.
And then to a large extent, I don't like them either.
Well, it's because you're all from Boston.
Right, exactly. We don't like anybody. But, no, the point I'm making is fans construct their own narratives as well.
Yes.
And I provided a rational fan of the Patriots narrative for you. Because before Deflategate, there was Spygate, and you had to deal with that narrative first of all. I thought that you would never support the Patriots because I was... One of the things that made us become friends was the way you handled Spygate.
Well, I had to... So if I was going to watch this team and support them, I had to know that they legitimately weren't cheaters, and that is not a self-obvious thing for any team, especially when everyone is screaming at them that they are cheaters and they were sanctioned and whatever. So I looked into Spygate, and I read everything I could about Spygate, and my conclusion was like, what? Why? Why do we care about this at all? Like, the difference in what we're doing is filming something from a higher level than from on the field. And what? By the way, folks, I don't want to get into the whole Spygate thing here. I'm just giving a very high-level overview. But if you want to read about the technicalities of this, the Wikipedia page does a tremendous job in explaining it. And we're literally just talking about a rule change of distance, like height, where you can film something. Because as I point out to everyone who talks about this today, and I ask them, is it currently allowable to film signals in the NFL?
Yes.
The answer is yes. And everyone is blown away by that answer. That rule had never changed. It's just simply where you could film it.
Right, and the memo was given at the beginning of that season.
Yes, and it became a huge deal. I looked into it. I had no qualms about it whatsoever. Other team, I mean, not this is not an argument. It's a rhetorical flourish. But other teams have done way worse things and gotten much less punishment.
Well, and here's an argument, though. If Bill Cowher and Jimmy Johnson, two of the greatest coaches in the history of the NFL, are like, yeah, everyone does it. It's not a big deal. Okay.
Right. It's not just that everyone does it like everyone does it and it's cheating. It's everyone does it to keep a competitive advantage, you know, of 1% or whatever it is. And literally, what Belichick did, filming it from a different location, had no effect on it whatsoever.
We just lost our entire audience. We were doing so well in this episode.
We were doing so well, and then I had to defend Spygate. But my point is, the overall point, maybe we can do a special episode on Spygate or something.
No, fuck that. It's over. I'm done with it.
No, I want to beat people to death with it. Ugh. But my overall point is, I looked into it. I was completely convinced that they weren't cheaters. But I was still incredibly blown away by the narrative that they are cheaters and by how the media tried to find anything at all to pin on them to make this narrative true, no matter how stupid. One of the great examples I remember is an article talking about how, oh, headsets magically stop working.
Whenever
you're in Gillette Stadium.
That was the Steelers who exacerbated that one.
And then reading another article literally the same day about headsets not working in Jacksonville or something like that.
Well, nothing works in Jacksonville.
including the team. But, and then just thinking like, well, they don't work here. Maybe it's a headset problem that the NFL's, I don't know what it is, but basically they took this thing that is universally bad across the NFL, singled it out for the Patriots so they could support this narrative. So that's when I became particularly interested in the overarching narrative. And then wanting to deconstruct it a bit. So I've been rambling.
I just want to watch the Patriots win football games.
And that's the other half of this, is watching incredibly talented human beings do spectacular feats, why they're good at it, what it means to be good at it, what it means to be good at coaching a team, all stuff we're going to talk about in this show.
And how is watching them be good at it art? How is it a spiritual fuel for the soul? And I think that's what so many people miss. I don't want to go into a brief story because we want to keep a long story because I want to keep these episodes shorter. But briefly, what I'll say is, and maybe we'll talk about this on the next episode, we'll see. But literally watching the Patriots win the Super Bowl and learning about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick since changed my life.
Yeah.
If you look at my family and the way my family is, and you look at the way Massachusetts culture is, part of what deviated me from that is being in that dorm room, packed in on the tiny TV, watching us upset the Rams in that first Super Bowl, and still to this day learning the significance of that and why that was possible.
Right. The cultural experience of it definitely, you know, just makes it one of the most unique things you can experience as a human being, and thus why everyone's obsessed with it, but why we need to be more rationally obsessed with it.
Definitely. And we're going to look at, hopefully we'll do one for each week of the season coming up. We're going to take a brief break here. There's a couple preseason games left. If you enjoyed what you listened to today, be sure to check out our flagship show, Welcome to the Midside. You can find all of that and more on themidside.com. We have themidside.com/podcast for the main show. I have my articles on the culture in general, movies on just themidside.com in general. And you'll also find this show posted on there as well as on our iTunes and Google Play feeds.
Yep, we're on all the social medias at the Midside, and yeah.
And you can find Daniel, if you want to talk to him about Spygate and give him shit about that, where can we find you?
On Twitter at Daniel T. Richards.
And on Instagram?
On Instagram at Daniel T. Richards.
All right, sounds good. But for now, we're on to the Kansas City Chiefs.
My face, your face, instant face, go talk to whoever you want that does that stuff.